Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon on this May 17th. It's a Sunday afternoon, and in my world in Virginia, well, it's a little overclouded, but it's humid as heck. The flowers are blooming. The trees are out. So it's a lovely day in my neighborhood. This is Cassandra Dane. You're on the Edge. And this is a show that I highlight all of the fantastic artists who take their works to the edge. I'm on the World of Ink Network, and I'll start right off with saying we'd love to hear from you. So if you guys want to call in, the call-in number is 714-242-5259. And today I have a fantastic guest. Let's see, how do I describe Dale Ryerson? He's a fireman, a bouncer, a father, a husband. He's also an author, and he has an incredible book that just hit the streets called Simmering. He writes as S.E. Rise, and I can't wait to talk to him. Welcome, Dale.
Well, hello, hello, Cassandra. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. It's about 60 degrees, and the sun's out, and I'm sitting here in Anchorage, Alaska.
See, what a world of difference, Virginia to Anchorage. I've never been to Alaska. My guess is I sadly probably will never get there, but it's a world away, and I can only imagine how gorgeous it is there.
It's pretty nice. So you can't really complain about the view. You got mountains everywhere and trees and fish and bears and moose and everything else, too. So not so bad.
Have you always lived there or went there for a particular reason?
No, I was an Army brat, so my dad moved around a lot. And let's see, I graduated high school in Clarksville, Tennessee, Northwest High School. And about 2 days after I graduated, my parents moved up to Alaska. And I stayed down I was on scholarship for cross country and track for Austin Peay. And I boomeranged back and forth a couple times, and I was in the Air Force for 4 years. And finally, I realized I took a year off. In the Air Force, I was a firefighter in the Air Force. I took a year off, rode my motorcycle from Alaska to Florida, and that's a whole different story, but yeah. And then I realized I better get a job soon, so I got hired on with the DOD up here in Alaska as a firefighter in 1996, and I have been up here since then.
Well, my understanding is you're actually sitting in your fire station doing this show with me today, is that correct?
I am sitting in my room, and I have my door closed.
Well, do the guys and or gals who work with you know, A, that you're an author, and B, that you're on a radio show right now?
Oh, yeah, they know I'm an author. I try to take advantage of every moment of my, when I'm not going on calls or not doing drills or education or all that kind of good stuff, cleaning or mopping or washing fire trucks. Saving children, kittens, and getting babies out of the trees and stuff like that. But I try to get my laptop going and print out some words when I can. I'm pretty good on time management. And there's a couple of them that know I'm on the radio right now, so hopefully they know better than to come in right now.
Yeah, I can only imagine what being a bouncer and all, what you might do to them if they actually did interrupt you.
No, it's all good. It's one of those. Reputation takes you a long ways.
Oh,
and that's basically what I have. I'm not worried about it, so it's all good.
Well, it's interesting looking at your, and for those of you who are maybe listening for the first time, I write as Cassandra Dane. I'm Bethany Halley. I'm also the lucky, and I do say lucky, managing director of the imprints of Edge and Entice for Booktro Publishing Company. And met Dale that way. He is, in a sense, one of my authors and has this new release with Booktrope. And it happens to have a fabulous cover. I think it's a fabulous cover. And it has a lot to do with firefighting, it seems. Why don't you tell me a little bit about Simmering?
All right, about Simmering. Simmering, the main character is a woman. She's strong, smart. And she pretty much kicks anybody's ass if she needs to. She's a romance novelist at first, and she wants to change things up a little bit, and she decides to become an erotic novelist. She writes some erotica, but she really doesn't know much about erotica. She thinks she does, but she really doesn't. And she's sitting there drinking her cup of coffee, and the idea comes to her from I think it was a Cosmo magazine, and it's about, the article was, what working man makes the best lover? And as she reads the article, her eyes drawn away from the article to across the street, to the firefighters across the street doing their normal thing. They're washing their trucks, and they're being firefighters, and with water everywhere. And she notices around her that most of the rest of the women in the cafe are watching it as well. And I don't know if it's coincidence or fate, but the article, the number one working man, the best lover, was firefighters. So she gets the idea, hey, maybe, I bet you they have some fantastic stories. Excuse me. Fantastic stories. I bet you they would tell me why they are the best lovers. So she gets the idea, talks to her publicist, and they work something out, and she ends up in the fire station, talking to these guys, and they're telling their greatest sexcapade. I call it a sexcapade. That's one I kind of came up with that. But a sexcapade and their story, their real firefighting stories. And she soon realizes that, I mean, we all know that men and women see sex differently, and we see love differently. We see the whole world differently. I mean, I've been married 15 years, and I have learned this, of course.
Of course.
That men and women see the world differently. And she has this preconceived idea of what she's going to run into, but what she gets blows her mind. They're raw, they're strong, they're hard, of course, sex stories. They're erotic and they're powerful, and it actually does something to her. It impresses her, and it just opens her mind to the fact that, wow, men and women do see the world differently, you know? And, of course, there's a love interest. That's the captain. He's a big station captain. I'm not going to tell you his name because that's part of the mystery of the book. You have to read through the book because she doesn't know the captain's name until, like, a quarter of the way through the book. And that's kind of neat because she has to figure out how to talk to him without actually knowing the man's name.
Right.
Yeah. And he's a by-the-rules guy. When he's at work, he has rules. There's no nonsense, you know. Of course, you know, there's the horseplay and there's everyday things, but he gets the job done, keeps things in line. There's no room for the sex. There's no room for sex in the fire department whatsoever. That's how he sees it. And he does actually agree with so much with her being there in the first place. But on his off duty, he's a completely different person. He does whatever he wants, when he wants. He takes what he wants. He takes whatever he wants. He does whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and however he wants. Basically, there's no rules but his own on his off-duty time. And that's the person that she gets to know.
Well, and, you realize that I have to ask a question. How much of what, and I'm not asking Dale on the lover sense, but I'm asking on the fireman side, how much of the stories, do you put a lot of your experience as a fireman, any of the gritty, and I'm certain you put, you know, whether it's conversations and you know, all of that in your books, but do you have experiences that you've had that you place in the middle of the story?
You know, it's kind of funny you asked me that. I've never written as the main character is a woman. And I've touched on it a few times, writing as a female character. And it took a little bit of research to figure that out. But her thoughts and her actions basically reflect mine, her attitude on life. She's got a morbid sense of humor. She has dirty thoughts and inappropriate thoughts at the very inappropriate times. The firefighters in the story, the captain, of course, the captain has to be based somehow. And, of course, I drew on myself a little bit for that. But Yeah, the captain's a lot like me, but then so is Allison Fairchild. She's a lot like me also. These characters, the other firefighters in these stories, they reminded me of people that I knew throughout my career, because I've been a firefighter for 25 years, I think, now.
Right.
And so I drew on them. I drew on people I've known throughout my career and based it on them. Yeah, the stories that they tell her, well, how can I say this? I had to get them from somewhere. And most of the stories have quite a bit of truth in them. And I can guarantee that they are. I don't want to say that they're mine, because they're kind of freaking bizarre, but there's quite a few of them that are mine. Except for Love Machine, I am not a big black man with a gigantic Johnson. I am not. So that one I can't claim is mine. I am not Love Machine. But yeah.
Should the guys in the firehouse there be a little concerned you're telling them a little too much?
Nah. Most of the stories are mine. Oh, God, I just admitted it, didn't I? Yep, I did.
Yes, you did.
I just straight up admitted it. That's all right. See what you did? You had to admit my own story.
I know.
But the guys, nah, they're not worried about it. I mean, I work DOD, so there's a mixture of civilian. I'm a civilian. And there's a mixture of civilian and military firefighters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, like, every 4 years, they're always changing out. So I'm always getting brand new guys all the time. So I've met a lot of people throughout the years, 25 years that I've been doing this. And guys are guys. There are some that, you know, there's always certain types of people in the fire department. You have the guy who's the helpful guy. He's always wanting to help people out. There's the guy who's a smart ass. There's the old timer. There's the lifer. There's a stereotype that you would expect in a normal working environment. But firefighters, well, we have our own little world we live in, the way we do things. And not everybody can understand that, because unless you're in the situation or in the atmosphere, it's taken out of context, and you're looking like, are you serious? This guy's running through the hallways of the fire station with a towel on only, naked, running to the fire truck. That kind of stuff doesn't really happen in the other workplaces, you know. But I would tell you it does in the fire department. We get called out of the fire. We're in the shower, taking a shower, and a call comes in. Well, there's like 8 to 10 naked men grabbing towels and running to the fire trucks and throwing on their bunkers and with nothing on and going to fight fire or pull somebody from a car or do EMS, hazmat, all that kind of good stuff. So, yeah, it happens.
Well, how do
so,
you
yeah,
think?
No, I don't think they're too worried about the stories I tell.
Well, my guess is, if I were lucky enough to be, and I think, you know, we've all been tuned into firemen since 9/11 much more than probably anyone really thought about. I think it's one of those professions people take, quite frankly, for granted. You know, they're there to save you, your house, your belongings, your loved ones, your dogs. And I truly think people didn't necessarily put them in the forefront a lot until 9/11. And it's a sad state to say that a tragedy brought what you do and all the wonderful deeds that you perform in your job that is ultimately dangerous at any given moment. You never know. You can't expect. I can only imagine what that adds in a format to, even if Simmering is an erotic book, which is what it's considered, I have no doubt, and no, I have not read it in its entirety, and I definitely plan on that, but I can imagine what you're bringing to it, the emotions, the concepts, the stories, the words, that has to make you very proud as a fireman.
You know, it does. I try to keep it light. You know, there's a lot of humor in the everyday world that people don't see or they don't experience. But if you just pay attention, there's a lot of humor in the world. And I try to capitalize on those moments. There's awkward moments. There's moments that you're just like, are you serious? You're doing that. They're doing, okay, we're doing CPR on a dog. Fantastic. oh, we're going to blow in his nose. Oh, okay, that's cool. You know, it's a little bit funny, but it's like normal people don't do that kind of stuff. You
true.
Know, we try to be humble. Okay, nobody likes to see a bragger. Nobody likes to see that guy who's strutting around being thinking he's Mr. Cool and stuff like that. But there's a confidence to be a fireman that you have to have. And if you don't have the confidence to be able to face whatever challenge arises and to be able to adapt and overcome, and then you don't need to be a fireman. You know, there's just like police officer, you should expect anything at any moment and be able to deal with it.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're sleeping. It doesn't matter if you woke up at 2 a.m. and you have to pee so bad that you can hardly think. You can hardly think because you have to pee so bad, but it's not like you can take a break and take a leak, you know, because this person in front of you, this person's having a heart attack and you're having to give them CPR and shock them, push drugs on them, and bring them back to life, you know. It's just kind of those things that people don't really think about a lot. And that happens more often than you can imagine, is having to pee.
I can imagine.
2:30 a.m.
Sure. You know, and you're having to give up every whatever it is that you're doing for, you know, as an example, if you get a call in, a, you know, 5 seconds, you are gone, and this radio show, in a sense, with you ends. And that's your duty and your requirement. And it's something I think people take for granted. You're there to protect so many lives, and it's an awesome thing. And I'm so glad you're bringing it to the books that you're doing. And I'm not going to lie to you. There are a lot of chicks that want hot firemen. It's just a case.
You know, I address that in the book, too, a little bit, you know. Because she's like, what makes these guys so hot? Why do women love them so much? Is it because it's not because of the way they look? I mean, because firefighters good looking. Well, we get some ugly firefighters, but the fact that they're firefighters, kind of like, hey, he's a firefighter. You know, it's not that we're all hung like porn stars. You know, we like to believe we are, but of course we like to believe we are. We'll tell you, hell yeah, we are, but we're not. You know, we're just normal guys. Well, yeah, okay. What am I talking about? Anyway,
yeah, don't dispel that myth.
What am I talking about? Yeah, we are. Now, it's just a confidence that it's like, oh, yeah, I am. I'm going to do this. And you're going to enjoy it. So am I. So let's go ahead and get it on. You know, and that's kind of attractive, I guess, to some people. You know, that confidence you have in yourself. And you know what? That's what it's all about. If you want to have a good life, be a confident person and what you are, who you are, and what you can do. That's pretty much what it is. We see people at their worst.
Yeah, you do.
The worst times of their lives. That's when we see them. And when you're in that situation and you call the fire department and these people respond, you don't want to see everyday people. You don't want to see people who are basically a couple steps above you in your emotional range. No, you want to see people who are confident, smart, caring, and who will take care of the situation and make you feel better, fix the situation. If they can't, they are going to do their damnedest, and you will know that they have tried and done absolutely their best to make your situation better.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that, and I think also when you're bridging what you do as a reality with writing this in the erotic format, you know, the other side of it is, and you've heard this before, this is nothing new to you, that women love that concept of danger, whether it's the bad boy biker to a fireman, policeman,
true,
you know, all of that. They love that because typically you don't have to deal with or not allowed to deal with that in your everyday life. You know, you're working a 9-to-5 job, your husband's an accountant or whatever, and there are those fantasies that we all have as women. That takes us away from the good boy side into something that we will probably never touch, taste, feel, or have.
Oh, I think every woman should at least try or taste or feel or have at least once.
I don't disagree with you.
I think all women should love firefighters. we're ready and willing, except for us married guys. But anyway, there's a lot of single firefighters out there, and they'll do you right. Well, that didn't actually come out so well, but that's right.
I understand.
I'm a big proponent for firefighters.
I have to tease you a little bit. Dale gave me a, I don't know if it was the first sighting or whatever you want to call it, of a video he did. Not only was it just for simmering, but he added in a bit of his life. And he gave it to me and wanted me to watch it as the managing director. And then afterwards, I think he probably thought I watched it, and either I didn't respond quickly or something. And he's like, maybe it's a little too over the top. And I had to say, because it the video I thought was well done. It's kind of one of those, who is S.C. Rise? You know, who is this author and what kind of a man is he? Quite frankly, it read or it showed like a movie production in that you're leading it up to the book and the series, which, of course, it's at least a collection of three. I'm not sure if there's going to be more than three.
I have three now. I actually have two and a half. I'm working on the third book as we sit here, so.
And the other names so far are Sinning and Sizzling, correct?
Yep. Simmering, Sinning, and Sizzling.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. I thought they were pretty good names.
They're great names.
I did a little research.
One word sometimes can evoke a myriad of emotions, whether it's passion, lust, desire, you know, all of these things that kind of roll into that innate concept in whether it's a woman or a man. You know, I'm sure there are words for you as a guy that draw you into whatever it is, music, videos. You know, you have that moment that you look at it and you go, I got to see what the hell this is about.
Yeah.
And no, it's not the words porn star. That's not what I'm talking about.
No.
But you have it. And men and women
are a
little bit different.
Men's are, they are different. Some of those words, let's see, they're pretty much what you would imagine they are. I did choose the name Simmering. I'll change it this way. I did use the word title for Simmering. I did a lot of thought on that, you know, because I wanted something that showed, you know, I can't just say hotness, hey, hot, this is hot, no. But I wanted to put the heat there, and I wanted to make you wonder, what is simmering? Simmering means it's being suppressed a little bit, and it's about ready to boil. That's kind of enticing there. That can be taken a whole lot of different ways.
You did, in a sense, a double entendre where you simmering like a simmering fire for firemen, simmering like the woman's lust that has been inhibited and kept down and closed off. And now she's nothing
to keep it
more
under control
than a hot fireman.
And because you know what happens with simmering, right? When you try to simmer something for too long, it's going to boil anyway.
Of course.
It's going to boil and it's going to boil over.
Well, right. And if you have two that boil together, then imagine.
Exactly.
And we won't talk about sparks flying. Well, how did you decide to become an author? Has this been something that's been in you for your entire life, or did just something spark you one day and you said, you know what, I could write that?
That's pretty much how it went, too, actually. I've written little stories throughout my life, but I didn't really pay attention to them, and I didn't think about it until I got to a point. I'm an avid reader. I read all kinds of good things. And I got to the point where I didn't have any more books to read. No new authors, nothing that I was really interested in. And I was actually that was one of those bad times. I didn't have any money either. So it was like, not like I could afford them anyway.
Right.
So, you know what? I was like, I bet you I could write my own book. I'll just entertain myself. I will entertain myself, and I will write down something. There's always stories going on in my head. And I'd always thought about a lot of things that other people don't think about. And I'd taken some of those thoughts and written them down. And I was like, this would make a pretty good story. I wonder. And I started writing down things that I like to see in other books, you know, the stories that I've read.
Right.
And I started piecing it together, and I came out with a story that was an outline that was pretty cool. It was my first book was called A Harbinger's Tale,
mm-hmm.
kind of playing on like the Harbinger of Doom. And I like the fact that it's okay to be mean sometimes, or you know, there are bad things that happen to bad people or good people, and sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. So I got the idea: what if? I was kind of like into the apocalypse thing back then, zombie apocalypse. What if the bringer of the apocalypse is just a normal guy with a bad job?
Okay.
What if he's just a normal guy with a bad job, you know? And I started thinking about that. So I kind of put myself into that position and started thinking about how I would react to things. Can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So there's a sort of how would I react to these kind of situations? And I had this thought. My books are kind of, they're multi-story going on at the same time, it's multi-level. And I'd always thought about a creation story. You know, we all know the Christian beliefs. We all know the God stories and all that kind of good stuff. Well, I've always been that person who questions, which is probably the reason I stopped going to church and started having my own belief system. But anyway, I won't get into that. I'm always questioning. I'm like, what if? What if this? What if this? What if this? So I kind of played that story into the bringer of the apocalypse. He's a normal guy with a bad job given to him by God. Why would God give him that job? Because he's got to give it to somebody. And I decided to make, instead of making it God, I made it God a woman. And I based it on Gaia, Mother Earth. Because that myth, that story has been with us, with humanity forever. Gaia, everybody knows Mother Earth. Everybody,
yeah, absolutely.
Even scientists refer to nature. Well, nature won't let us see what's under quantum physics. Nature won't let us see that. Nature won't let us see inside a black hole. Nature won't. Well, who's nature? So I kind of played on that thing, that aspect of it, and created a story, her story, Gaia's story, how she created humanity, intermixed with bringing in the apocalypse, and why we had to bring the apocalypse, so that she would have to destroy humanity to save herself. To save humanity. So I broke open my Bible, and I know a lot of people read the Bible. They believe in the Bible so strongly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I decided to play on that a little bit. I took the story of Revelations, took the signs and the seals, and I put them in a practical sense. How could this happen? How could the waters turn to blood? How could their oceans boil? How could there be famine? How could this? And I put out a practical steps for each and every single one. And I wrote that into the story. So it's a pretty big story, and it's kind of complex, but you find out why this guy is such a... And you get a flashbacks of his life and what made him the person he is, which after I got done writing the book, I had to call my mom and say, Mom, Dad, I wrote this book. And I have to tell you that it is no reflection whatsoever of my life. So don't think that I'm saying all this stuff that just happened to me. Because I had a great life. I had a great childhood. My parents were fantastic, great parents. And I grew up well. You know, I had bumps and bruises and stuff like that. But stuff that I make up for this character in this book are not nice. You know, living with his grandma and she dies and the cats have to eat her. He's having a battle with the cats, about 8 years old, and, oh, yeah, because they get hungry and start eating him, trying to. Oh, yeah, that kind of stuff.
How has that book been received?
Well, I wrote that in 2007, and I self-published. because 2007 was a little bit different back in the writing days in 2007 as opposed to 2015. The e-books weren't so popular. It was hard to get e-books back then. I mean, for the everyday person now they're the golden thing. The e-books are the thing. But back in 2007, that wasn't really the case. And I wrote the book, and I submitted it a few times to some of the, I tried to anyway, publishing houses. I'm not sure if it ever got there or if anybody ever looked at it. And I started doing my research on the publishing houses, and I didn't like the information that I found. I didn't like it at all. It's, you can sit on the shelf for 6 months and nobody even read it, and they don't have to tell you if they read it or not. And, well, I don't want that. It's like, if I read a book I sent to you, I want you to read it and tell me, no, this sucks, or yes, we'll take it. And there really wasn't an option for that. And then I found CreateSpace. That was a self-publishing.
Yep.
And it was kind of brand new then. I'm not sure when they put it in effect, but to me it was brand new. And I was like, hey, this isn't so bad. This is pretty cool. So I gave CreateSpace a chance. And the e-books still weren't in yet. And made my book and put it out there. And the biggest thing I've ever done, the biggest mistake I made, I didn't have a very good editor. My editor sucked. My editor was the worst person to be the editor, and that was me. I was the editor. I should never have been my own editor, ever. That was my biggest mistake. So
I put
my book out, put it on CreateSpace, and I had to put it together too, because there's really not a lot of information how to, it being where I was at, how to make a book. So what I had to do was I had to take a book, look through it, basically copy, not plagiarize, but, you know, format it exactly like the book that I'm looking at. And I tried to do that. And that kind of sucked, but that's all right. Over the years, I've done trial and error the entire way. Let me tell you that. My books are better now.
Yeah, very much
because
so.
Of trial and error.
Well,
the story,
I think
you know,
we
the story
all grow
great,
as authors.
But, huh?
We all grow as authors. You know, if you hone your craft, whether it's your writing style, to learning about the industry, and it has changed dramatically over the last few years, and it will again. You do. You learn an awful lot, and you look back at those days, and you go, "Oh my God, what was I thinking?"
Oh, I know, huh?
Oh.
It's not that it's embarrassing, because I try to keep up with the edits and making it each of my books better all the time through formatting and, you know, cover changes and just trying to brand myself as S.E. Rise, because I didn't start out as S.E. Rise. I started out just writing as Dale Ryerson, and I really liked seeing the name on the cover of those books, and that's pretty much why I didn't go with the pen name, because I liked seeing my own name on the books, you know.
Sure.
But over the years, I've decided that, well, I hooked up with Booktrope and got, you know, picked up by Booktrope, the whole branding thing. That was new to me also. And that's been, at first I thought it was a huge monster. I was like, oh, my God, there's no way that I am going to be able to do this and do it efficiently. But their system that they have is fantastic. They teach you how to do this. They show you what you need to do. They show you how to do it. And it's tried and proven. And I've been trying to follow along with that. So branding isn't so bad for me now. I've accepted it, and I'm working on it.
Well, that brings about a good question. How did you get involved with Booktrope? How did you discover them, or they discover you?
How did I discover Booktrope? Let's see. Well, I'm gonna give a shout out to my friend Kimberly Jacks. She's the one who she was my lit Nazi. Okay, she's the one I sent my books to because she was into that kind of thing. Correct grammar and stuff like that. And I would send them to her, and she did a fantastic, she did a very good job of correcting my mistakes, finding my mistakes, and sending it back to me, rewrite some of that, you know. And she's like, you need to, I know an author, I follow an author, you need to you should hook up with her. You should talk to her. And I'm like, okay, you know, okay, yeah, sure, yeah. And then, you know, time would go by. She said, you should really hook up with, meet this person. She's really cool. And the person that she was referring to was Rachel Thompson. And she's like, you need to meet Rachel, connect on friends with her on Facebook. So I'm like, all right, fine, I will do it. And I did it. You know, I sent her a friend request, and she was gracious enough to accept it. And I started reading her posts, you know, on Facebook. And I'm like, these are really interesting. And there's like there's a missing void in my, say, my education as far as promoting myself. That's the biggest problem I have. I had no idea how to promote myself, no idea how to sell books. I could write books, and I could put them together, but I couldn't get them to the readers. And the more I started to follow Rachel Thompson's posts on Facebook, I'm like, this woman is smart. She writes smart stuff. And lo and behold, she wrote a post about book trope. And I'm like, what is book trope? Let me read this article here. So I started reading the article, and I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. And I started, so I'm like, no way, this cannot be this true. This is like when you see your dream and you're like, no, this cannot be real. Because if it's real, that means this is a dream come true. And, you know, people aren't ready to accept their dreams come true. So I started doing some research into it, and I started looking up book trope, and I started educating myself on book trope. And I'm like, this is the real deal. This is everything that I have searched for the last 7 years of writing. And I went ahead and I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. What do I have to lose by sending in a submission? What do I have to lose? And I'd already written Simmering. Because I tried to jump on the bandwagon with the 50 Shades and the popularity of erotica. So I took my manuscript of Simmering, and I submitted it. You know, I filled out the forms, filled out online forms, and it got to the point where there's one question on there that says, why should we publish your book? And, well, that's kind of like, that's one of those questions that a lot of people fluff through. They try to write what they think the company wants to hear.
Right.
Why should you? Because I write a great book. It's hot. It's steamy. You know what? I'm going to try something different. I'm just going to lay it out there, plain and simple. I've written all these books. They're not great. They're not the best edited, but they're original stories. They're entertaining. They're original. And I don't have the skills or the knowledge to promote them to the readership. I don't know how to do it. And from what I understand, the whole team concept, I will get an editor, I will get a book manager, project manager, and a cover designer. That is a writer's, I can write the books, but I can't really do the rest of it. Those people can. And that's what I need. I need somebody like that. I need a team like that because I cannot do it myself. And my books are well written, and they're good enough to be out in the public. And I think that people would love them. And that's kind of basically what I said. You know, I didn't try to fluff it up and make it all look pretty. I just told the truth and told them what I needed. And I would tell you about 3 weeks later, it was a very good moment in my life. I got the email back from Jennifer Gilbert, and it said submission approved. Holy smokes. I still have the email, so I'm actually going to print it up somewhere too from under the wall, you know.
But, yeah, I understand.
I got approved. And I was like, oh my God, is this real? There's no, this can't be real. And it's real. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like a little fanboy. I'm like excited, you know? And I got on with Booktrope. And, you know, it's a little, the process was a little confusing at first because it's, I was so new to being, you know, and it's like a, I'm a firm believer in facing your fears. If you face your fears, you conquer them, you know, adapt and overcome, and they're no longer fears. So that's how I kind of tackled the whole branding, creating a brand. Don't brand the book, brand the author.
Right.
You know, and that was my only, Simmering was my erotica book. That was only, I think it was like, I'd written two already, Simmering and Sitting. And I'm like, oh no, I'm going to be S.E. Rise, because that's kind of why I chose S.E. Rise for that genre. And I'm like, well, why, if I'm not just going to, if I'm not branding the book, I'm branding the author, then I should switch all my books to S.E. Rise, even the horror stuff, even the horror sci-fi thriller stuff, and make that as a package. This is S.E. Rise. He writes this kind of stuff. He doesn't write just erotica or horror or thrillers or whatever. He's a writer. This guy can write. And it's a little bit different from, I know, it's what they teach, but I have this, I'm multi-genre. I'm going to capitalize on everything that I have, you know, and I think that's it's kind of a smart way to go. I'm trying, you know.
There are two schools of thought to that, and that's an interesting, you bring up that point that you're going to do horror and erotica and sci-fi and whatever. There are a lot of authors who, and still some traditionalists who think that folks that write erotic novels are, quote, not truly writers. So when you infuse your other books that are not erotic in base, even though you might have some erotic tendencies in them or flavors, I think that lends itself to that question. I write under three pseudonyms, and I do it on purpose because I think a lot of men don't want to read books written by women who are true thrillers, that are thrillers. I mean, I've really garnered that. And so D.H. Black was born because that allows me to be a male, quote-unquote, because I write very gritty. I don't write like a woman. But it also lends itself to that problem of you're trying to be three people with marketing and everything else.
Yeah.
Do you think or have you felt any pushback for writing erotic, whether it's friends, family, et cetera, the industry? And what are your thoughts about as you do more of the other types of genres, do you see a conflict?
Well, when I chose S.E. Rise, you know, I wrote Simmering, and I self-published, and I wrote Sitting, I self-published that, and chose S.E. Rise because I wanted to take on a different identity. Well, I didn't know what that identity was or who it was. I didn't know if I wanted it to be a female or a male, and I kind of left it in a gray area.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really torn. I didn't want to. I don't want to lie, or I'm really a truthful person. You know, I'll say what I feel, even if you don't want to hear it. You know, and I didn't want the readers to find out, hey, this book is written by a dude. You know. Right, or have that just make, or any kind of negative feelings towards that. So I decided I'm just going to go with who I am. You know, I tried to play the erotica writer and that kind of persona, and it's not who I am. I think I think Dale Ryerson is S.E. Rise, and the whole package is more interesting for my personal benefit than creating an S.E. Rise persona that I'd have to make stuff up with, or, you know, just create a new person. I'm more interesting as who I am than who I'm pretending to be. So that's why I went and stuck with S.E. Rise. Because I got a lot of cool stuff out there. I've done a lot of cool things. You know, my wife is never impressed with anything that I do. I do cool stuff. I mean, if you look at my jobs, and look at the things. If I want to do something, I just go ahead and do it. I directed a movie about a cancer survivor who was trying to complete their bucket list, and he wanted to ride his motorcycle to the top of the world, to the top of Alaska, as far as he can go. And he wanted me to direct a movie, so I'm like, yeah, I've never actually done that, but yeah, sure, why not? And we went in and did it. We did it last summer. And it's coming out. Awesome. It should be finishing up in post-production soon. And so we wrote it. I directed it. I filmed it. And we went to the top of the world, and we went and stood in the Arctic Ocean. Yeah, it was a little cold. But it was something new, you know? And I think I got off base. What was the question again? Sorry.
No, do you think that as you are doing your erotic versus the other, do you see potential conflicts in the future with trying to do all these genres and one set of folks perceiving you one way and another, perhaps another, and not liking that you're moving back and forth?
Yeah, you know, I really can't do a whole lot about that. I figure the readers are either going to like me, like the style that I write in. They're going to like the books that I write and the stories that I tell, whether it's erotica or horror or sci-fi or thrillers. And that's the only thing I can do. You know, I mean, I can't change who I am, and I can't morph myself to make them like me better.
Right.
They're either going to like me or they're not. And that's kind of how, that's actually part of me. You're either going to like me or you're not. And if you don't, then you're not going to like me anyway.
That's,
you know,
true.
I mean, if you don't like me, you're not going to like me anyway. So I'll find somebody who does like reading what I write. And I've been pretty open about, even when I talk with the erotic readers, I make sure they know I write horror too. And then I kind of tease around that I write erotica and I write horror. I find your soft, sensitive, secret areas, and I touch them with whatever I want. Sometimes it might be with a wet tongue, and sometimes it might be with a rusty, like a rusty old nail.
Mm-hmm.
But that's who I am. And I think that actually has some appeal to it. You know, I mean, readers, there are some readers who are dead set in a certain genre. They either, that's all they read is erotica. But you know what? That's not really true either, because sometimes they read romance, and sometimes they'll read a thriller. Or they know somebody who reads thrillers. You know, it's not just black and white. It's kind of a gray area to me. And I think that the readers are willing to take a chance a little bit, because we all like different stuff. So I can only do so much.
Right, but and readers, I think, even if you like erotic, it's sort of like eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich every day. It's wonderful and you love it, but every once in a while you want something completely different.
Exactly.
No, and I think that readers are smart and they're savvy, and they're bored to death with a lot of the, quite frankly, the erotic out there. I mean, if you see another takeoff on 50 Shades of Grey, and not, you know, I understand what you were saying on catching on the, in a sense, the fire, no pun intended, of 50 Shades, but you did it with a different flavor. You didn't go and rewrite 50 Shades in some other fashion.
No. I did read it, though, because my wife told me, she's like, have you ever read an erotica book? I'm like, not really. I mean,
dude, I have
she goes,
to say,
you need to read it.
I challenge you to read anybody else. I mean, I think E.L. James, what she did, and, you know, God bless her for the success, and I'm so proud of her for what she's achieved. And there are a lot of authors who will say, that's a crappy book and this and that. Guess what, folks? Get off the jealousy line. What she did was successful, and there are reasons for it. However, having said that, read a couple of others. You know, because they might bring a different verve. I mean, that's just one flavor of erotic. There are dozens.
Oh, let me tell you, I found that out. Oh, my gosh. Okay. I looked around for some other, I checked out some other books, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is pretty. I don't think I can read this right now. You know, it's just like, holy smokes, this is hot stuff. you know. And I couldn't just write sex, though. I had to write a story. And that's, I'm a good storyteller. I may not be the best novelist or book writer, but I can tell you a pretty good story. And I can get you sucked in, and I can let you, you'll be interested in the stories that I have to tell. And so I kind of combined that with my erotica book. And I did have to learn how to write as a woman, though, because there are decisions and there are feelings and there are things that women feel that men do not, and there are things that men feel and do that women do not. So one of the things I did was I contacted a lot of my Facebook friends who are women, and that I kind of knew they had certain qualities and that I wanted my character to be like. And I got with them and I started talking to them, and I'm like, listen, I kind of need your advice. You know, I kind of, there are going to be decisions that need to be made or reactions that need to be done that I'm not sure if I could react in a genuine way, because I'm a man. What would you do with this situation? What would you do? What would you think? How do you internal think? What's some of your internal dialogue? You know, and it worked perfectly. They were more than receptive, and they were more than willing to be very candid, be very truthful, or tell me, no, that is not what you need to do. That's not something a woman would do. That's stupid. Okay, that's stupid, right? And this is what, and they'll be like, this is a possible way for a woman to react. This is a possible way for how they're going to feel, or what they're going to feel, how it's going to feel in touch, or, you know. Mm-hmm. And
that's
I took their
valuable
advice. And I think it was awesome. I can't put a price on it. They were perfect. They did a good job.
Well, that's the kind of research. I mean, for folks who don't think that, you know, authors have an imagination, but whatever you're writing about, if you take it outside your everyday and everyday life, people want to get outside of. They have to live paying their bills and worrying about the roof leak and the kids going to soccer practice. They want to read about astronauts and bikers and firemen,
yeah,
and something else outside
exciting
of their everyday. Exciting.
Exciting stuff, yeah. I mean, that's why we read. It's that step away from reality into something different.
Absolutely.
Whatever excites you.
And to that token, no matter if you're taking your realm outside to write something, you have to do some level of research. And you're not going to go to Jamaica necessarily to try to write that novel about the Jamaican area, but the internet is a powerful thing. Or friends,
yes,
that you can talk to.
Yeah, a lot of people have been to Jamaica. You know, they're Jamaicans here. Talk to Jamaicans. Live in the United States, you know. I mean, you just got to think outside the box.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty – research is very valuable. I think I can't give credit to the person who quoted it, but don't bullshit your reader.
Yeah.
Don't BS your reader. Because I will tell you, if you try to BS your reader, they are going to call you on it. You are not the smartest person in the world. You're not the smartest person on the subject. There are lots of people who are smarter than you, and they're going to call you on it.
You bet they will.
They are. Yes, they will. They will call you on it, and then you'll have to answer why. And you'll look dumb, especially if they do it in a review.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks.
Oh, yeah, it does. In your marketing, what have you found that, and you've openly admitted that wasn't your forte, and Team Trope, of course, gives you a book manager for those who don't know. You have an entire team with Book Trope, and you do have your editors, your proofreaders, your cover designers. A book manager's job is to try to develop the marketing plan. The author, of course, has to market along with the book manager, but that person does take a lion's share of trying to find innovative ways to bring books to the market, because there are millions of books. There are millions of places to take them. Facebook is inundated, Twitter, Instagram, pick something. What have you found outside the box that you're seeing at least or hopeful in that will bring a difference to the marketing for you?
I've been being nice. I've been trying to connect with a lot of people, a lot of other authors, and I've been doing a lot of sharing. You know, the only way, one of the things that makes sense to me is that this makes sense. Readers don't want to read about you. If I'm going to just self-promote myself, and all I'm doing is talking about me, this is me. The readers don't really want to read that so much. But if I talk about so-and-so in his book or her book or what they're doing or what the projects that are other projects that are going around, then they're going to listen to me. They're going to be interested in the things that I have to talk about because I'm not just talking about preaching about myself. I'm giving them information about other things. Mm-hmm. And the way it kind of works is if,
Not me, sorry.
And so what happens is the other authors, they turn around and they talk about other people, other things, and they bring up me, and they talk about me, and they promote me through the process. And their readers find out about me, and my readers find out about them, and we do a little cross-exchange, a little cross-interest. That's the biggest thing that I've found so far that's helped. I've been doing a lot of these book giveaways and releases and cover reveals where the author does an author takeover, and we do an hour of talking with the readers, and we talk about ourselves a little bit, and we interact with a lot of readers, and we give away books, ebooks, and we talk about ourselves a little bit. But that's what they want to hear about. Is some of the projects that I'm doing, you know, they want to interact with me. They want to ask me weird old questions. And this last one was pretty good. They asked me some pretty off the wall questions, like, do you believe in unicorns? Do you like unicorns? Oh, yeah, my mom likes unicorns. Yeah. Have you always been a man? Yes, I've always been a man. Even when I was a baby, I was a man.
That's a little scary of a question, but what the heck?
It was funny. It was cool. It was like, you know what? I kind of like those questions because, like, I can give you a creative answer. I don't have to give you a standard, yes, I'm a man. You know, I can make it a little bit of funny, you know. You're going to ask me a silly question, I'll give you have a silly answer, try to at least. So that way they get to know me a little bit better, know that I have a sense of humor. They know I have a sense of humor, and then I'm willing to talk to them and tell them something that they might be interested in. Maybe they'll read my book, because maybe he writes like that.
Yes, and I think people, that's what I always told the readers in both, you know, the imprints that I'm managing is, be yourself. With a blog, with Twitter, with whatever, they're sick to death of the promotion. Just be you.
Yeah. Yep, just be you. I mean,
yeah. It's amazing how that works.
There's more to you than your book.
Yep.
There's more to you than your book. I mean, I love ancient aliens. I love astronomy. I love the stars. I love the universe. I love physics. I love thinking about how the Big Bang happened, Stephen Hawking. I love horror. I like reading erotica. I like porn, you know. I love fishing. And there are a lot of people. Those are interesting things to talk about, not just talking about a book.
Sure. And the more likable you are as an author, the more people want to latch on to knowing more about you, the person.
That's true. I try to be nice, you know. I mean, what else is there to do? I mean, why would you be anything but nice? I mean, you can be not an asker, you know, but you know, be cordial at least and talk to people.
It can be a dog-eat-dog business, but you can say that about any business.
Yeah. You know, with those people, negative people who are like, asking you new stuff and trying to call you out and make you look stupid, just ignore them. Don't deal with them. There's no place in the world for all that negativism. Talk to people who are interested, who are truly interested in, and have a positive question. But, you know, they want to interact with you.
They
not do. Make you look stupid.
That's very, very true. We're kind of winding down on time, and I want to make sure of a couple of things. First of all, what advice that you would give to anyone considering whether they have been published, self-published, not sure what they want to do, have been burned in other publishing companies? And secondly, of course, I want to know where we can find you, all of you. So.
Okay. My advice to writers is if you want to write a book, make sure you're writing it for the right reasons. Write a book for yourself. This is the one time in your life that you get to be selfish. You get to say what goes in your book. You get to say what goes into the story. You are telling a story that is inside of you that needs to come out. Write it. Do your outline. If you do an outline, you can see how the story progresses. It helps you along. Do your character trees. But do it for yourself. Don't do it because, you know, oh, I have to do it for my mom. I'm going to do this. No, you're not. Do it for yourself. If you make a book for yourself, that is your greatest, that is a great accomplishment. It may not sell. It may not ever be popular. And you shouldn't expect it to be popular or sell. But you know what? You still wrote a book because you were true to yourself, true to your story, and you stuck with it. Now, if it does become popular, you do get picked up by a publisher, or you stay self-published. Anything extra is a bonus. It's bonus. Hey, two people bought my book today. Fantastic. I mean, sales in about 6 months, but two people bought it today. That's cool. That's a bonus. Mm-hmm. But you still wrote a book. It's still out there. There are people who can't write books because they don't believe in it. They don't believe in who they are. They don't believe in the story they have to tell. But you have written a story, gotten it out, and it's in print. It's right there. And you created that. You created that whole little world right there in that book. So stick with it. Just write it. Don't sit there and do not become an editor as you write. Don't. Write your story. If you want to go back and fix it, editing, and check it up and say, so you don't look too much like an idiot when you turn it in. Do that, but don't sit there and pick it apart because you get stuck on the editing, because you will never get your book written. Write your book, write your story, then go back and review it. That's the only way it's going to get done. You know, what was the last question?
Find Dale, a.k.a. Essie Rise.
All right, you can find me at, I do have a blog, a webpage, and that is at seriseauthor.com, and that's the blog, my webpage. Find me on Twitter, seriseauthor13, on Twitter. I have a Facebook page, an author page, serise, erotic thriller. Send me a link for Dale Ryerson, too. I'm on Facebook all the time. And just punch in Dale Ryerson. I have my personal page. I have Dale W. Ryerson, which is my original author page. But mostly my S.E. Rise page is what I'm sticking with now. You find me there. I think I have a Flickr video. I can't remember what it's called. But the picture social media. Instagram, there you go, sorry. I'm on there, too. hopefully, eventually, I'm going to be everywhere. Hopefully, they'll be like, hey, in the news today, Essie Rise. Hey, look on Essie Rise. Essie Rise is trending on Twitter. Yay! I play those hashtag games all the time, too, so that's pretty cool. Those inappropriate. Ruin a movie with a sexual scene or something like that, I'm on there. Or make a horrific mom's birthday present. Hashtag, I play those games all the time, too, so on Twitter.
I love it. that makes you as interesting as I, you know, said who you were and all your personas in a sense in the beginning. You're a very interesting man, and I am so glad I've gotten the chance to chat with you today.
Well, I am glad that you interviewed me. I am glad to be on your show, and I'm glad that I wasn't talking like a racehorse bastard like I did last time I talked on your show. I actually learned how to breathe this time and try to talk in a normal voice instead of that high-pitched, only dogs and cats can hear you. Yeah, that's bad.
You did great. So there are no worries, and I think our listeners are going to love hearing this. And remember, for all of you out there, this show will be available to download at any time. So if you've only caught a tail end of it, grab onto the link and listen when you're ready, because it's a hot show with a hot fireman. Ooh, I can say that. Thanks so much, Dale. I very much appreciate you being here, and I cannot wait for your success. I'm very excited that you're under my imprint as well. It's great times for all of us at Book Trope.
Well, thank you, Cassandra. I am very happy to be here, and I look forward to whatever comes in the future.
Awesome. Well, you have a great afternoon in Anchorage, Alaska, and may you not have horrific calls, but if you do, I have a feeling you're going to save their lives.
Well, there we go. That's what it's all about.
Okay, then.
Thank you very much, Cassandra.
Thanks, Dale. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.
And for all of our listeners, thank you so much for being here. Just a couple of reminders. We have some fantastic shows coming up. This is the World of Ink Network. On the 21st, there's a special edition with New York Times bestselling author Vincent Zandri. And on the 26th, it's story time with J.D. Holliday, and as well as many fabulous shows in the future. So thank you very much for being here. Again, you can download it anytime. And I hope you've had a fascinating listen. And have a wonderful afternoon.